joining us. We're here for the November 18th Title and Escrow Commission meeting. Let's go over the people who are here, and then we will see who's on the phone. Nancy Franson, Randy Smart, Perry Babalus, Darla Milovich, Commissioner Kaiser, Randy Overstreet, Reed Stringham, Michael Covington, Steve Gooch, Tracy Klossmeyer. Is Anna, are you, is it Anna or Anna?
Anna.
Anna, help me.
Whitehour.
Whitehour. And then who do we have joining us on the phone?
Nancy, this is Chase Phillips. I'm about almost to the parking lot. My apologies for being late, but I'll be there pretty shortly.
Okay, sounds great. Thanks, Chase.
Allison,
I'm here. Okay, so Chase and
Allison are John Bartlett, Public.
Hi, John.
Who was that?
John Bartlett.
Randy Count, Southern Utah Title, St. George.
Hi, Randy.
Hi. Matt Red.
Thanks, Matt. Is that it? Okay, thank you for joining us. Why don't we start with the administration of the oath of office for Darla? Are we doing anything else?
Over by here is cool. Yeah.
I, Darla Gaylich.
I, Darla Gaylich.
Having been appointed to the office of.
Having been appointed to the office of.
Title and Escrow Commission member.
Title and Escrow Commission member.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support.
That I will support.
Obey.
Obey.
And defend.
And defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And that I will discharge the duties.
And that I will discharge the duties.
Of my office with fidelity.
Of my office with fidelity.
Yes, I'm not so sure what was so attractive about Minnesota, other than, you know, when there are not high pressure areas that keep us a little bit warmer, they're getting the snow and the cold weather. But James has left, as you probably may know. He has taken employment in another state. So we just want to express appreciation for his service on the committee as a commissioner and as a chair and the work that he did. And we will probably mail him a plaque, I'm assuming, so that he can have a dust collector on his wall. But, I think, since I've got just a minute, a lot of organizations just don't work well without solid representation from members of the community. And to those of you who are serving us, I want to say thank you. Thanks for what you do. I know Allison and Chase are on their way in, and maybe it's a little hollow without them here, but thank you for the work that you do and for your participation. I personally would just like to say thanks. And to the members of the Title and Escrow community that so faithfully attend these meetings and participate, thanks for being here. It's good to have you here. I know you don't do it for the continuing ed. You do it because you're interested in your community and It was interesting. Many years ago, the governor's office was interested in reducing some of the numbers of boards and commissions. And this past year, the legislature, for some reasons, said we need to reduce the numbers of boards and commissions that we have. And so there was an effort to go through and reduce some. And they had asked us, and we said, yeah, we only have a couple, and we're not interested in eliminating either of the commissions that we work with. And then in a last iteration of committees that were going to go before the legislature to be eliminated, Timeline Escrow showed up. I don't know why, but we got a letter over to, or a communication over to the governor's office to Mike Bauer and said, absolutely do not eliminate this committee. It's functioning well, it needs to function. The community, title and escrow community, wants to do it, and if you eliminate it, I think there would be a strong opposition to it. But, so, thank you for your work, thanks for your participation and engagement. I think right now there's some challenges with what the realtors are doing. I'm not sure how all of those things will pan out, if there will be more legislation this year. I have not heard anything, so nothing's come past me. No one's at least contacted me, but anyways, thanks for all that you do and for your participation. And we'll miss James and wish him the best in cold Minnesota.
Send him a scarf, too.
We may need to do that. That's right.
Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate
that. Big broad Utah on it somewhere. So.
Yeah, I think that's great. Okay, let's move on and let's look over the minutes from our previous meeting. And when you are ready, let's have a motion to approve.
Aye.
Randy Smart, approve the minutes, and Darla Milovich seconded that.
I think it was
Allison.
Allison.
Oh, Allison seconded. Yeah, that's right. I
Darla. Darla abstained.
Yeah, I think
okay.
You abstained. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Okay, Reed, we will move to concurrence reports.
All right, first up on the list is the licensing report that you have in your hands there. I looked it over, didn't see anything out of the ordinary, but we're free, ready to answer any questions that you might have, and on that basis, I'll just submit it to you for discussion and consideration.
So, two new companies, new licenses, new companies. Metro Title and Escrow and Taylor Title. Everything else looked good. I did want to point out that Clay Holbrook is 50 years with his license.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it is.
50
awesome.
Years.
I saw that.
He sold his company a few years ago, and I talked to the person who owns the company now, and he says Clay is down to a 40-hour work week. he is still there every day working hard, so.
Yeah.
Okay. We have an approval in the second.
Make a motion to approve.
Second. Okay. Chase Phillips approved and Darna Milovich seconded. Okay, Reed, let's move on to the penalties. All in favor say aye.
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 That will be what you remember about me. That will be the only thing that I. It even says right here on my agenda, all in favor say aye. Thank you for the reminder.
Did Allison want to vote on that?
Allison, did you want to vote on that?
Sorry, yes, aye.
Okay. Thank you. Reed.
Well, the next item on the concurrence list here is penalties. We've got a couple of cases with some forfeitures. I believe the stipulations and orders were in those cases were provided to you. You've had an opportunity to review them. We have our assistant AG who handled those, Eddie Vasquez, who's here. If you have any questions about them, otherwise we'll submit it to you for consideration.
Reed, I still have a question. I know you mentioned last month that you're encouraging companies, you know, when you do an audit yourself, you know, to come forward and get things resolved. I'm still wondering if there shouldn't be some sort of, I guess, difference in the penalties based upon whatever was done that was incorrect, because it seems like you could still have all kinds of violations versus one violation, and yet the penalty's the same.
Actually, the $5,000 is a cap. So if it hadn't been for the cap, these folks would have been way over $5,000. But if it's under $5,000, that's what the amount will be.
Okay. So are there instances where it is under $5,000? Because it seems like that's what we see pretty much every time.
There have been.
Okay.
I think there's one that I can recall that was under $5,000. Maybe Tracy, can you?
I think that we've had one.
Yeah, we've had one.
But there is a way, but they add up with the, so you could have one penalty, but if you violated thing 780 times, then, you know, it's going to be much higher. So if you only did it a couple of times, yeah, it could be lower.
Okay.
I have a question also. So this is the, we're not talking about the annual report that they send in.
Correct.
It's the escrow charges. So as part of the process for someone to get their license, isn't filing the escrow fees one of those things?
It is.
So how did they get their license without filing?
Because it's not tied to the licensure. It's a requirement that they have to do it. But it's not something Randy's group verifies that they've done, because they can't file it before they get a license. You can only file after you get the license.
Okay.
So they, and we're here to help them, but we did an internal audit and found multiple companies that had never filed them.
Okay. When you audit them, do they say they knew they were supposed to file them, or do they plead?
It depends. We've had a couple that one of the companies that that I was involved with said they thought they had done them, but it was they had bought the agency from somebody and they had thought the prior people had done it, and then were shocked when they didn't have them filed. So.
Is it the type of thing that possibly within the department there would be some follow-up, even if it's the whole next year when you collect annual reports, that you would notice that they had not filed their escrow charges?
That was not anything that the previous that was previously done on the annual report. So it is done now.
It is done that you
it
are
is.
Looking for. Okay. That is great. I just am surprised they went five years.
Yeah. We had one that was older than that.
Okay.
Hey, Nancy. So just to follow this question, so you're saying the fine would never be more than $5,000, even if they were a repeat offender?
No.
So I don't mean to throw somebody bigger in the bus, but say, you know, First American does 10,000 things and it ends up being 14 cents a transaction, there's no real reason to dissuade them of $5,000.
It's
go ahead, Tracy.
It's only when it's in an audit situation. So
yeah.
if somebody sent us a complaint that we wanted to investigate, that's not an audit.
Right.
So that would
this
be
is purely on the audit.
This is purely on the audit, because we're coming in saying, please help us, we need all this stuff from you. You know.
And I get on some of that stuff, you know, I understand. I'm just wondering if, you know, say some of these companies here did the exact same thing 2 years from now, would it be $5,000 again?
It would depend on if it was found
in
an audit.
Okay, good to know. Thank you.
But then, same thing. Once these companies do file their escrow charges, that's it. It's, they don't have to do it again. It's a one-time.
Unless they make changes to them.
Yeah. If you've had a chance to look over, let's start with Lenmark, right? Lenmark Closing Services. We have a motion to approve.
So moved.
And a second?
Seconded.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
So Randy approved it and Darla seconded. Did you want to say something about the second one?
No.
Same thing.
Eddie's here to answer questions. Otherwise, we'll submit it for your consideration.
Multiple issues, not just the escrow filing, and it's still $5,000.
It would have been, that one would have been over $5,000 had it not been an audit.
Yeah, that's why I was asking earlier.
Okay. Okay. Based on what they said, do we have a
motion to approve?
Darla approved. We have a second?
Second.
Chase. Okay. Chase or Allison, seconded. Mm-hmm. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Okay, Steve, I'll take care of those. Okay. Okay. Quarterly continuing education report. Michael.
Quiet in the nursery. No rejections, just typical approvals and yeah.
Did you have any submitted during the last quarter that you did not approve for any reason?
During this particular quarter?
Uh-huh.
No, because I have a space that where I'll put it like I did the previous one. If I don't approve it, then I'll list it for you. So,
okay.
So it was straightforward month, and American Land Title's been busy.
Yes, they have. Do you have anything you want to discuss about the upcoming quarter? Any changes in your process or anything?
Nope, everything's the same. So.
Okay, so we need an approval of the report.
I'll make a motion to approve the report.
Chase Phillips approves the report, and Darla seconded it. And all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you. Thanks, Michael. Okay, Carrie, board duties and responsibilities.
I do have something this month. So, I know, you guys are always so excited to hear about our annual training on the Open and Public Meetings Act.
Yes, that's why I was racing to get here.
I'm sure it was. But as you know from previous years, it's required that we sit through training every year. And I feel like I'm a kindergarten teacher, but essentially everything is on this sheet that's submitted in your packet. And this is prepared by the Office of Legislative Research and General Counsel, and this is what they provide to the legislature. And I think it's very useful and concise, and so I steal it from them and use it for our training every year. And it is updated from the previous year's document. But as you know, the goal of the Open Meeting Act is for state government to be conducted in an open and public forum. And so the Open and Public Meeting Act tells us what to do. And we'll just go kind of through the highlights that are on the sheet. The first thing is public notice, and Steve is very good about doing that. The law requires that notice of this meeting, which is our agenda, be sent out at least 24 hours prior to the meeting. And the agenda must contain pretty, detailed information about what you will be discussing. And as you'll see in the kind of last paragraph of that section, a public body may discuss an item that's not on the agenda, but you can't take action on it if it's not on the agenda. Okay, and then the next topic is minutes, and Steve's very good about doing that. He takes minutes and records the meeting, which is also required. And then he will post those minutes on the public meeting website.
Yes.
Great. And Steve's really good about this, but draft minutes must be posted on that website within 30 days. And I think since we meet at least every 30 days, that's pretty simple. Closed meetings. Closed meetings are kind of the hot topic of the Open and Public Meeting Act. As a body, you can only go into a closed meeting, which means just you without all the public, for certain reasons. And those reasons are listed here. I would, in looking at the list, I think you would only use the first two. So the first one is to discuss a person's character, competence, or health. So that would be, you know, like if you have an administrative action that dealt with an individual. If it's dealing with a company, not a person, then you can't go into closed session to discuss. But to discuss that person's character, you can go into a private meeting to discuss. You would then have to come back out of the closed meeting and vote in an open meeting to take action. And it's important to note that to go into a closed meeting, and this information is all on the back side of the sheet, you have to have someone has to state with specificity the reason to go into a closed meeting, like you make a motion to go into a closed meeting, and there has to be 2/3 of you have to approve that to go into the closed meeting. Okay, then the next thing is emergency meetings. I don't know if we ever have emergency meetings, but if there is an emergency situation, you can hold an emergency meeting, and then there is not a requirement to have the 24-hour notice, like of the agenda. Electronic meetings are available, and we've taken, all of the steps have been taken to make sure that that is appropriate, so we can conduct meetings electronically. We still need to comply with the 24-hour notice to have that done. And if you violate the Open Meetings Act, then specifically the closed meeting portion, it is a Class B misdemeanor, so be careful. But that's why I'm here, is to make sure you don't go astray. Any questions? Just read this at your leisure. It's pretty simple. Oh, I think it's important to note on the back side where it's definitions of a meeting, because this just applies to a meeting, all of this that we're talking about. So a meeting means a convening of a public body with a quorum present to discuss, receive public comment about, or act upon a matter over which the public body has jurisdiction or advisory power. And then this is key. A meeting does not mean a chance or social gathering or a convening of a public body that has both legislative and executive responsibilities. So if you guys are at a party and you happen to all be there together, that is not a meeting. A chance social gathering. So thank you, Perry. Okay, any questions?
Thank you. Okay, let's move on. Update on 2019 goals. ULTA report, I did go visit them last month after our meeting and opened up what Tracy talked about last month. But I'd like, isn't that still on here? We'll talk about them and I'll tell you how they responded. Other than that, they were working on doing webinar CE training coming up in the new year, and also planning for their convention in January. For the Real Estate Commission report, every month they usually meet before we do, so I have something to report. They're actually meeting Wednesday, so I haven't been to that meeting yet.
move on to new business. I mentioned last month that we should look at our 2020 goals. They are on the back of your agenda. They continue to be, we make sure testing is relevant. That is something that usually happens in the summer, that we meet, one or two of us meet with someone and they are, that goes over testing questions. I think that's important to leave on there. We have found in the past some questions that really didn't pertain to our industry. The second is keeping a working relationship with the Real Estate Commission by attending their monthly meetings. The third is keeping a working relationship as a liaison with the ULTA. And the fourth was increase awareness of wire fraud's effect on consumers and agencies, which we worked a lot on that. Earlier in this year, are there any other goals that you think is important? Or are there any of these goals that you feel we have reached the end and need to be replaced?
Well, I think they're all still relevant, absolutely. I think this should all continue through 2020.
Okay. Any other comments?
I think they're all relevant too. I don't know that there's any, I would hope that one day we'd be able to reach the goal of wire fraud, but we all know that it's still happening. And I think by having it on our agenda and taking a look at it each month, it just helps to keep it at the forefront of everybody's mind.
Thank you, Allison. Is this something that needs to be voted on? Okay, let's move on. I added new business discussion on what we call thank you rates. I know Steve was wondering what that is. And we have heard, and it's been brought up to us, Stuart Title, so I'm speaking from Stuart Title. It's been brought up to us from several different sources that there are some rates out there that we call thank you rates. You may call them something else. But I was interested in finding out what the other commission members and also the department feels of rates, that the amount of time spent to search and examine does not change, but it's a reduced rate based on something else. Like this one is a military rate has come up, that there is an underwriter that's offered a military reduction. There's no change in the search, there's no change in the examination, it's just, that's why we call it a thank you rate. Years ago, there used to be a religious rate that for religious organizations, and I haven't seen that as much lately. But that's why I felt like, just to open up and just see how you feel about those types of rates. We feel, I'll let you know from our underwriter, we feel like if someone wants to get a thank you rate, they have a filed minimum escrow rate. So you could reduce your escrow rate to the minimum if you wanted to for military. Or they have that opportunity. But these are filed rates for military. And so I just...
Nancy, they also are claiming senior citizens.
Okay. So on top of military, senior citizens, mm-hmm. And none of these rates do change how we search. I understand that maybe you're going to say we'll get back with you next month. I understand that. So okay.
No, not going to say that. Okay. So because this is the filed rate, they would have to file and justify why they're going to give a different rate to a different class. When you said religious rate, that is highly discriminatory, and mm-hmm. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Because that would not be allowed. So if you're going to give in traditional PNC insurance, offering a military discount is a general category that they'd use. Senior citizen discounts, they do that as well. They're actually in the statute as a requirement for auto carriers to offer a senior citizen discount on anybody who's over 55 that's taken the driving course. So, but you do have to justify it. So the rate analyst would be looking for something that proves that this group is deserving of this discount and why. So the title insurer would have to file that rationale.
So just to clarify here, we're talking about title insurance rates and the escrow rates.
No, not escrow rates.
Not escrow rates.
Just filed title. And so rates. I feel like there's a difference between title rates and property and casualty, because
we are more of preventive, where the search and examination comes before the policy is issued. So I'm wondering what they would have used to justify that something was different to reduce the rates.
That would be up to the company to submit that to us. We don't normally tell an insurer what justification we need. But they are required under 19A to justify the rates that they issue now. So they have to give us expense and loss numbers in order to support it. That's what the code requires.
Okay, thank you.
So people that are bringing these thoughts or comments up to underwriters, this is something I've never thought of it in this term as a thank you, Ray. That makes sense to me, hearing it that way. When people learn about this, or when we hear about it in the competitive market, what course of action would the department recommend we take to have somebody look into it, to review and see if it's a legitimate filed rate or approved rate, or if it's in violation?
You actually can check all insurer rates online through the rate search on our website. So you can go in and look and see if they filed it.
And if we find one, just to notify the department to look
sure.
into it?
Sure. If you see one that has not been filed and they're charging a discounted rate, sure.
Are there any that may have been potentially approved in the past and somebody might not have understood that? I can actually think of, as this comes up, I actually can think of one where I'm pretty sure I know about an organization that has a lower rate for when any religious organization buys property. I actually think that might be filed.
Oh, yeah, if you have something like that, we would be happy to look at it, but hopefully our rate analysts caught it.
I wouldn't have thought of that as being an issue, so I suppose I'm glad it comes up today. But
yeah, rates can't be based on anything that's, there's a list of discrimination that you can't base a rate on that's actually in the statute,
okay.
And religion is one of them.
Very good to know. Glad you brought it up.
Thank you. We will look into that.
Nancy, you know, I'm sitting here listening to what you were saying about giving them, you know, for whatever reason, this rate, but that's not what we're hearing out there. What we're hearing is a good deal or something to that fact, nothing to do with military, senior citizen. This, I get calls every day, people doing, you know, price checking, and so-and-so said they'd give me a good deal if I went there. And so that's what I'm hearing, not that, well, I'm getting this rate because of, and sorry, but that's wrong.
And that is what we're hearing as underwriters, is we're hearing a good deal, and then we ask them to check into it, and we find that it's one of these rates. So if you are going to our industry, they're supposed to be basing it on cost of search and examine.
Right.
Okay, that's the policy. So a millennial could say it was discrimination because it's going to cost the title company the same amount of money to search and examine for a senior citizen as it is for them, but they get a discount.
So they can make the same arguments on an auto policy that they're, you know, their driving records are exactly the same. The only difference is the age, and that's justifiable based on expenses and losses for a company.
It seems to me that age has an effect on, would have an effect on auto rates.
Right.
But
yes.
As Nancy mentioned, it would not have an effect title.
Right. I mean, the record is what it is when we do our title examination. So however long they've owned the property or however old they might be has zero bearing on the amount of risk that we're assuming.
Right, right. And so I would say that if we have rate file, if you know of somebody who has filed the rates like that, I'm not the rate analyst anymore, so I haven't looked at title rates for a very long time. They were not filing things like that back when I was doing them. If they're filing them now, we're happy, again, you can go look at it online to see if people have those discounted rates filed, and if they did, you'll be able to look at what their justification was.
Oh, we will be able to see the justification.
Sure, if they haven't asked for protection, which most title insurers aren't asking for confidentiality.
Okay.
Yes.
I've actually ran across a transaction probably 6 or 8 months ago where we lost an order to this title company because the underwriter had some kind of a reissued bulk rate based on volume. Client volume, and it's an underwriter that's I've never heard of, but it's there, and it's apparently they're approved in the state of Utah. So how does that justify? If you send me 10 orders a month, I'll give you this cheap rate. That's an underwriter.
I don't know. Can I answer as an underwriter while I'm here?
Of course.
Okay. And maybe there's other underwriters in the room. Underwriters do have what you call a bulk rate or a national rate. We had that come up a few years ago. They are not supposed to be used with brick and mortar offices. In states that have brick and mortar, those agents are not supposed to be using those. And so we actually had to tell an agent, yeah, we know that's in your rate manual, but you can't use it. It's more for the national companies that, you know, we also pulled that rate out of our rate manual because we had too many agents in the 4 states that I work in that would see that in their rate manual and not call an underwriter to check. They just started giving it. So we actually pulled that bulk rate out of our rate manuals. So our national division back east probably can still use it, but brick and mortar offices are not supposed to. I don't know if that, but I don't know if that's different for other underwriters. Anyone else? Okay, we will look into that. Let's move on to old business. Let's continue our discussion. On a discussion on submission of escrow rates.
So I was fairly sure that we left it with, it was just a discussion to start, and you were going to check with the ULTA to see what their thoughts were. So.
Right. So when I brought it up with the ULTA in my meeting last month, it quickly received, they were extremely hesitant to even look at it because of what had happened in the past when we tried to change escrow rates. But the discussion came up, and I realized, Tracy, that I must have misunderstood. When we were discussing it last month, the word annual came up a few times. And so there were people that went back and said, are we supposed to be filing this annually? It caused a lot of consternation. And we realized that what you were talking about was just the one-time escrow. And your work has probably increased because of the companies coming in after Senate Bill 121. I would think that is why it has increased more for you?
It's not necessarily the increase, it's just that it's such a manual process. So and going back after we did our internal audit and found multiple carriers that are agencies that didn't have filed rates, it seems pretty punitive to, you know, that's to go back and say, oh, you should have done this, and they're like, but we thought we did. And so we just, it's a very manual process for us. That was the point of trying to move title to be more of a, that the minimums were already filed. I had also asked the question how often the minimum rate is charged, and so I was hoping you guys could give us some feedback on that. How often do you, or is it just a basement rate that nobody ever gets to? Because we do get calls from consumers saying, this is what they're saying the filed rate is, but they're not charging me that. How come? So then we send the consumer back to you to explain to them why they're not getting the rate that you have filed. So do you have any information on how often that, I mean, if it's a legitimate minimum rate, I mean, we can keep taking, I mean, we'll keep taking the filings regardless. It is just a really manual process for us. And it's the only rate that we charge a fee for to file. And so it just is a, it's a nightmare for us to track all that stuff down. It's a bit of a babysitting job. you know, making sure that people have filed them. We have to wait for the check, so we have to keep calling out, have you sent the check yet, have you sent the check yet? And then we have to do our part, and then Steve has to post it on the website every time there's a change. He has to update that list. So that was my intent, was just to get you to talk about it and consider, but I really am interested in how often the minimum rate is used.
Tracy, Darla's sake, maybe you could explain what we had proposed as well, just so there's a clear record and everybody's...
I read the minutes. I read the minutes. I'm just sitting here trying to come up with a good explanation of when the minimum rate would be charged versus like an escalated amount. And I mean, I guess there's a bunch of different scenarios with the rate.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the thank you rate that you were just talking about, from a title insurance perspective, from the actual policy, I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around that because the record is what it is and we're still assuming the same amount of risk. But from an escrow standpoint with those rates, I mean, if you wanted to give somebody a thank you rate, or if you knew that they were having a hardship coming up with the amount of money that they need to in order to be able to purchase a property, a lot of times you'll see real estate agents kick in a portion of their commission to help their client. Obviously, all of this is underwritten through lenders, and you'll see title insurance companies revert to their minimum rate just to try to help that consumer still be able to get that home. And so as far as how often they're used, I don't know how I can really, I mean, do you have any idea how we would be able to even give you?
All I can say is it's rare. It's rare, okay. that it actually happens.
Yeah, it is
rare. It is, the term you used as the basement rate, I think maybe that's probably fairly applicable. And I would bet that everybody in this room would have
a different scenario
or a different opinion on when and how. And I think that's something that, for the most part, it seems like we all use as a measuring stick for each other, I guess, to keep each other in line on some level. I know that we would end up in situations where we would feel like we would want to charge no rate at all under certain circumstances. And we do feel obligated. And I can see that if there were no minimum rates filed, that we would end up with people doing work in Utah, like not charging for their escrow fees, or not charging any escrow fees. I know that would kind of go that way. So I know...
But not charging a fee at all is not what we're proposing.
Right,
no.
Right.
We're proposing just to set the minimum so that nobody could go under them.
And just set the minimum across the board.
Yeah, so that everybody, I mean, that levels it, right? Then it's just, that's the minimum, nobody can go under it. That's all that we were suggesting, was to just do that.
So nobody has to file anything,
right,
and get dinged. And,
right.
And we don't have to go through the labor-intensive process of tracking down checks and that sort of thing.
Hey, Nancy. I don't think anybody in the industry necessarily has a huge issue with that. I think the problem is it doesn't become very political, and it becomes very, for our industry. I think if the state wants to do that, you guys are just going to have to draw a line in the sand and do it. Because what you see is the people that we're going to be charging that are going to be pissed about it are exact customers. And so to even take stances on it, and I get back to Glenn when he was sitting in that seat, that was a nightmare. And so if you're going to do it, you can't even do it even for a minimal fee. You're gonna waste a lot of time and energy and a lot of, you know, I mean, if you're going to say, okay, it's going to be $100, it's not even worth the battle because it's going to be huge, let alone with our own industry now with 121, some of those same people now actually own titles, so you're going to have an even bigger rip within the industry, let alone folks who do a lot of builder work. And that's probably your one spot I would say you see consistently is on the builder side. So people doing, I guess builders to be unnamed, but, you know, some of those guys, and I don't even necessarily disagree with what they're doing there, but I think there's a big rip. I think the state would just have to take that on. I don't think you'd get a huge battle from a large portion, but there'd be some definite vocal opponents of it. I just don't see how anybody in one of your seats would want to take that political heat,
right,
as it is. And even from Commissioner Kaiser's standpoint, it would become a political hot seat because of the realtors and everybody else.
Thank you. 1 second. Allison, did you want to say something?
I've just been saying something similar to what was just said, just along the lines of, you know, we've kind of already gone down this route, and it just did not end well. It did not go well for any of us. And it went anywhere from accusations of price fixing to threats that those minimum rates were going to, since they were there, were going to have to be used. And so I just don't know that I have an appetite. And this is just me speaking personally, and of course, you know, I support the commission regardless of what, or, you know, whatever we decide. But I don't know that I personally have an appetite to go down that road again.
Thank you, Allison. Blake?
I think there's a requirement in the statute that escrow rates cannot be set below the cost of doing business. And I'm not quite sure how the insurance department would make that determination.
Well, we would make that determination with input from industry. And that's why it was presented to the commission.
And let us know what that number kind of is. Well,
I think we check the rates on file, and most, they're pretty close to all being the same. So we assumed that maybe we could get a meeting of the minds here with industry and dispense with this notion that everybody has to file their own escrow rates.
You could get input, but I just don't think you're going to see anybody want to, you know, be the whipping boy for the industry, you know, because that's what it'll be. Yeah. It's going to have to be the state saying, this is what we're going to do. We see it's best for us and the consumer. But I just don't see anybody in the industry wanting to be the target.
What? I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Because we went through this before, and it's still very clear in people's mind. I found that out because when I went to the ULTA, I said, do you want to poll your members? And I could just feel it. And there were some people that immediately maybe felt like this was an opportunity to raise it.
Yeah.
And I don't think we want that political battle within our industry right now, especially after going what we went through earlier this year with Senate Bill 121, where they were divided on that. Also, I do have Glenn Roberts, who was sitting here when it happened, and he, you know, he put his hands up and said, be careful, because right now, if the commission starts something, even though everyone in this room understands what Tracy's saying, and we understand the 75, would it be perceived by those other members of the legislative body that were the proponents for Senate Bill 121, and those who have just barely opened title companies that were trying to do something that would be maybe detrimental to the people trying to come in. We all know that it wouldn't affect them. But a lot of what we do is perception as well.
So what you're saying is there's no rational reason to have one step minimum rate. Let's say the department looked at all the rates and said, okay, there's the lowest rate that anybody's filed. That is going to be the statutory minimum. Period, we're done, nobody has to file escrow rates. You're saying that there's no rational reason to oppose that move, but a lot of people, for whatever reason, will sort of get spooked, and they'll think somebody's trying to pull a fast one on somebody else, and so there'll be a lot of backlash. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
And
so
even
you.
Before, you go ahead.
Just you made me just think of something there that, to Tracy's question earlier, if the state were to actually come in and set the minimum rate and say, okay, here's what we think it should be, this eliminates administrative expenses to the, whatever justifiable reason that
right.
you have for doing it, right?
Okay, yeah.
So you set the minimum, and now the public calls you and says, why isn't this agency charging the rate that you set? What would your answer be at that point? Would it be the same approach
that they don't
call the agency and find out?
Well,
yeah.
They don't have to charge the minimum rate. They just can't charge below it.
Yeah.
That's the only purpose of the minimum rate, is so that you don't charge below it. But with all of them being different, well, mostly the same, but when consumers call us now, we send them back to you. And we did have a gentleman call and ask us this in the last month and a half and said, why am I not getting the minimum rate that's posted on your website?
And we'd have to say, to prevent a race to the bottom, I guess.
Right.
That's the policy.
Or to offering free services, right? And then giving it away, and then, so.
Because you can see it both ways. You've got people that would immediately look at this and say, can we use this to raise rates? Because our industry feels like, on the escrow side, that we don't charge enough for our services. Yet you've also got people within that same mix that honestly would do it for free if they had the opportunity. So minimum rate makes a whole lot of sense. I think Scott pointed out some really good, I think that might be the best approach from my point of view, is if this is going to happen, I think the state needs to take it on since this is what's going to happen, because it's a topic that has potential to fracture our industry again, as it did once before.
Thank you. Now I understand the landscape of things. I appreciate that very much.
And Reed and Tracy, were you involved a few years back where the department actually did try? They sent out the forms.
I wrote the rule.
Okay. And everyone had to do it, and...
Yeah. Yeah. So I was involved in that. That's why I recall all of those conversations. So, but I thought it was just a good idea to bring it up again and keep it at least in your minds that it's a burden. It is punitive for one of your own to violate that law, and it just seems like it's just a finable thing that could be
fixed. Labor intensive for you guys. I mean, would there be a way to just better automate it to lessen the burden on working?
So we could have you guys file through an automated system, but it costs you money to do it. You do it once, maybe twice in the lifetime of whatever it is that you're doing, and that seems to be unfair to your industry to do that to you. Your insurers already file through SURF, but you guys don't. And it's an easy system to use. If you only do it once, the time it's going to take you to do it, that's not right to ask either.
Is there any other part of your process that can make it easier for you?
We have tried to think about it, taking check. We take checks. We can take the payment electronically. But again, you all have to call in and do it with a credit card. We've educated the best, I think, that we can, people, to understand the process and how to do it, the rules out there. But as you said, isn't there a way that the department can handhold a new licensee to make sure that they get it done? At some point, we look back at the industry and say, you know, look, this is clearly what the will of the industry wants, so make sure that you do it. Because, you know, it just takes one more step off of us to make sure that people are doing what they're required to do. So we will continue to do it. I appreciate the opportunity to at least approach you and have the conversation. So thank you for that.
And I will add that we do, at our checklist for signing new agents, have you filed escrow charges is on there. But maybe that's maybe First American could do the same, add it to your checklist. I don't think there's anyone else from another underwriter, but John Bartlett, if you're there, maybe that's something that all underwriters can just add to their checklist of signing agents, that just make sure they file escrow charges, and maybe that will help you as well.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you,
Tracy.
Thank you, everybody. That was very helpful to me. I appreciate it.
Okay, other business, 5-year review of R-592-16.
So every 5 years we just need to check the rules that we have on the books and make sure that they're still useful and not outdated in any way. So basically all we need to do is just, the commission just needs to vote and say yes we need it or no we don't. We can't make any changes right now, but if it needs to be kept with, you know, an overhaul or something, we can do that at a later date.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. This is the prohibited escrow settlement closing transactions. Refers mostly to flips. I haven't heard anything that makes me feel like we need to change this rule. So we just need to vote yes or no. Concur, right?
Yep.
Okay. All of those in favor of keeping this rule, R-592-16, prohibited escrow settlement closing transactions as it is,
say yes.
Do you need a motion?
Do you need a motion and a second for?
Probably. Yeah.
Well, it does say yes or no. That's why. So, Steve, do you want a yes or no or a motion to approve?
Let's
as
do
is?
A motion.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Allison, there you go.
Okay, so moved.
And a second?
Second.
Allison moved that we will keep R582-16 as is, and Chase Phillips seconded it. Thank you.
And then vote.
All in favor say aye.
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 Perfect.
Aye.
Do we have any hot topics? So if not, we will adjourn this meeting, and the next one is scheduled for December 16th. In the copper room. Thank you very much. Thank you for all of you on the phone. Continue.